I am Plant on the Line. This is thecommentary.ca. Joining me now is Antonia Zerbesius. Let me read from her bio. Antonia Zerbesius, columnist for the Toronto Star's Living section, has been telling people what she thinks ever since she could open her mouth. Her opinionating career dates back to grade 9 when a cartoon commentary on a teacher resulted in her suspension from high school. The principal sent her home with a note calling her rude, obstreperous, and bold. Her parents were neither amused nor surprised. Once she was punished for being that way, now she makes it pay. Her column in The Star and her blog, Their Broadsides, are regular reads of mine. You might remember seeing her on television in recent years hosting a program on CBC News World Inside Media. She was a longtime media critic at The Star. Please welcome to the Planta on the Line program, Antonia Zerbesius. Good morning, Ms. Zerbesius.
Hi, Joseph, and just a little correction. It's
sure.
Obstreperous. Obstreperous.
My vowels are loose. do you miss writing about the media?
No, not at all. And I have many reasons for that, if you want to hear them.
Yeah, because we do miss reading about all the, you know, I mean, some people call it gossip, but I thought it was interesting.
Well, some of it was gossip, I admit to that, although it was all sourced gossip, and it wasn't just loose speculation. And it was a lot of what was going on behind the scenes, as well as the bigger stories, such as cuts to the CBC or CRTC decisions or media concentration. But the reason I don't miss it is because it was, I felt like, you know, the proverbial kid with his finger in the dike.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'd like to think that what I do can make a difference, and it stopped. I was just banging my head against the wall. I couldn't stop media concentration. I couldn't stop the destruction of CBC. I couldn't stop people from focusing more on Britney Spears and Paris Hilton's crotches and instead of paying attention to the bigger things they should be paying attention to. I couldn't stand, my blood pressure couldn't stand watching the American cable news networks anymore. My neighbors were tired of hearing me scream at the CBC. I could go on and on and on and on. It just wasn't fun anymore. When I started writing about television for The Star in 1989, I mean, then it was just television and radio. It didn't encompass other media. I would open the report on business, the Globe and Mail's report on business, every morning, and they have the index of companies. And I would go down the line. It would be Alliance, Atlantis, Baton, CanWest, WIC, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And now it's just one giant, you know, CTV, Globe Media, CanWest, Alliance Atlantis thing. It's all Bay Street now. Before I could pick up the phone and, you know, have a drink with Moses Neimer or lunch with Robert Lantos or something like that. Now it would be going through layers of vice presidents and communications professionals, and it just wasn't fun anymore.
But your new beat is one that you enjoy, is it?
Yes, it's one, in fact, that I wanted for many years. I don't know if you're familiar with her, Michelle Landsberg, best known, I guess, outside of Toronto as the wife of Stephen Lewis,
right,
and the mother of Avi Lewis and Naomi Klein's mother-in-law. She had a column in The Star for many years. She retired in 2003, and she is an activist, a pioneer, a feminist. And I wanted the job very, very badly when she left in 2003, but management thought I would be more useful as a media columnist, and every time our management changed, and it seems it's changing every 10 minutes right now, I would pitch the new guys and say, please, 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 and finally we had a woman publisher, Yagata Pike, who unfortunately has just left the company. She got it. And she recognized that it's very important to maintain women readers. And in fact, we're the only newspaper in town with a balance between men and women in our readership. And, you know, if women get the paper, there's a good chance that the kids will pick it up. You know, if only to look at the comics or the entertainment section or whatever. And then they would pick up the habit of reading the newspaper. So it makes, and plus women make most of the buying decisions in the family. So it makes sense to beef up, you know, pages aimed at women, and even though many other sections were cut in the paper, Jagoda had the foresight to maintain our section and, in fact, increase it, because it does make sense economically.
And you hear from a lot of readers through your blog, too, Broadsides, right?
Yes, and they also comment on the column through the Star's main website, and I get tons of email.
And do you find that there is a great desire for the issues that you're writing about?
Yes.
Why do you think it is that other papers aren't doing this? I mean, I'm in Vancouver, and we don't get the Star here, unfortunately, except online. So why
didn't other papers have media columnists?
That's a pretty good point, yeah.
I was the only one in the country, number one, and I'm the only one in the country doing this. And, you know, I truly believe that a good newspaper is about comforting the afflicted and afflicting the comfortable and giving voices to the voiceless, which also happen to be the Star's values. They are in our corporate charter, so it's a good fit in that respect. But, nobody speaks up for the single mothers. I live two blocks away from a housing complex, a municipal housing complex, two gigantic high-rises and then a whole bunch of townhouses, and I see what goes on. I see how these women are struggling. There's a 13-year-old boy. I see him every afternoon responsible for looking after his 1-year-old sister. Well, I'm sorry, but a 13-year-old boy cannot, or girl for that matter, it's got nothing to do with his, his dad, cannot be charged with looking after a 1-year-old, especially when that 13-year-old boy himself is at risk for getting scooped up by gangs.
At the outset of this election campaign here in Canada, I had Rona Maynard on, and she's
been... she hired me for my very first magazine article.
Flair, right?
Yeah, back in 1978.
She's really a great lady, isn't she?
Yes.
Anyway, we had her on, and we talked about, at the time, this was at the outset of the campaign, there was a cover story on McLean's about the so-called women's vote.
Yes, and, I have that, yes.
Yeah, and how they'd seemingly decide this election. At the time... we were talking in early September there, mid-September, I guess it was, it seemed that Harper was doing well with the so-called women's vote.
Mm-hmm.
As we're just under a week now to the election, what do you think happened?
I think that other people have gotten to women voters. Now, this is just speculation on my part, but by that I mean if... Dion or Layton comes out and has, concrete plans for child care, for the kinds of, sort of basic home issues that are of concern to women, then they would take away from Harper. Their plans make Harper's $100 a month, which is taxable, even though just this week he announced that, single parents wouldn't have to pay taxes on it. It makes it look like for the ridiculous pittance it is. And I think that women are starting to get it. The other thing that happened, of course, was Bill C-484, the so-called Unborn Victims Act. For almost a year, we heard the conservatives say, oh, no, this has nothing to do with abortion. It has nothing to do with redefining, who a legal person is. This has nothing to do with it. And then right just, literally on the eve of calling the election, they go, oh, well, there are certain languages, certain clauses in the bill that sort of, we don't want to open up the abortion debate, blah, blah, blah. Well, we're not stupid. We could see what was going on, and don't think you can pull the wool over our eyes just like that.
Well, when you saw Harper feeding babies on TV and wearing the sweater vest, almost looking folksy, was that insulting, do you think, to women?
I wouldn't go that far as insulting to women. It's deeply cynical. It's like Sarah Palin right now. If you go back and look at the YouTube videos of her in the evening gown competition, for example, in that Miss Alaska contest or whatever it was, and you hear her talk, when they have to come up and talk about world peace. And by the way, isn't it nice to hear a former beauty contest contender not talking about world peace? But when you hear her talking about whatever it is that she was talking about back then, you didn't hear her dropping her D's, you betcha.
Yeah.
Wink, wink. And all of a sudden, she's talking like she just stepped out of the trailer park. I find that deeply cynical and deeply insulting to voters. And I would say that Stephen Harper's sweater vest and sitting there, all folksy like, talking about how he likes to play hockey or chess or whatever it is with his son. I mean, give me a break.
But it does, it frustrates you, doesn't it, that it still resonates, that sort of, I guess, charm or appeal, doesn't it, with some voters?
Charm? Have you ever met Mr. Harper?
No, but I guess that was the wrong word.
Have you ever met,
yeah.
Mr. Harper? No. I'm sorry, but, you know, when you have a face that is stone cold, there's no amount of lighting, sweater vesting, or makeup that's going to change.
But about the Sarah Palin thing, you know, we're dropping the G's and acting sort of folksy.
Yes.
That does appeal to some segment of the American voting
populace. Well, should I say how stupid that segment is?
Yeah.
You know, I was watching The Daily Show with Jon Stewart the other night, and during the debate, the vice presidential debate, one of their correspondents was in some bar up in her hometown. And I'm not laying this on her hometown in particular. I'm just, you know, just referring to this as an example. But, you know, here are all these people saying, oh, you know, she's just like one of us, and, you know, you feel real comfortable. Well, you know what? That's what they said about George Bush, too. I don't know about you, but I don't want the most powerful person in the world or the person who's one heartbeat or cancer cell away from the most powerful position in the world, you know, to be just like me.
What did you make of the primary campaign and Hillary Clinton, the role of gender in politics? Do you think we've gotten far?
No.
I don't think we have we?
No, I don't think so. You know, the Sarah Palin's looks, I mean, there's no question she's a spectacular-looking woman, but it is an issue. And, you know, every time we see or hear or read a newspaper story about a female politician, there is always some reference to what she's wearing or her look, and what was done to Hillary Clinton. And it is undeniable. I could sit here for the next 2 hours and give you example after example, you know, comparing her, you know, with pundits comparing her to, you know, the sort of the worst memories of their first wives, or every time they hear her voice, it makes them think of, take out the garbage! I mean, these were things that were being said on news programming. And to say that, you know, she lost fair and square, I don't buy that for a second.
Well,
a man with her qualifications and her background would have won that race.
Well, it must be frustrating as a feminist to find that sexism was so acceptable or so mainstream, isn't it?
Yes. You know what? I don't know how old you are. And
I'm in my mid-20s.
Okay. All right. I'm old enough to be your mother. But I remember a very different time. You know, I grew up, I was in my teens through the 60s, and I started university in 1968, and I was told, you know, a lady does not wear pants downtown. You know, I attended a university in downtown Montreal. We didn't call them pants, and we called them slacks, right? You have no idea what it was like to... you know, have your options limited, to see ads in the newspapers, in the classified ads, help wanted male, help wanted female, and the jobs totally segregated. And all the female jobs, of course, were either dental, you know, assistants or secretaries. Secretarial school ads filled the newspapers and magazines. You know, the whole thing about going to university was not to get your BA, but to get your MRS. If you look in my high school annual, you'll see young women saying, I want nothing for myself, just a handsome son-in-law for my mother.
Hmm.
It was all about getting married and not being smart. You couldn't be smarter than the guys, because the guys don't like that. And we've seen that, of course, with Hillary Clinton. The guys don't like that. And you could never win. You could always let the guy, you know, win, whether you're playing tennis or bowling. And we're a heartbeat away from that. And it bothers me that young women take it for granted. Everything that, you know, women like Michelle Landsberg and Doris Anderson and Gloria Steinem fought for, and they're willing to walk away from it because the boys don't like it if you're feminist.
You mentioned starting university in 1968. That's 40 years ago.
Yes, that's the point.
Well, no, I was just wondering. we haven't gotten far in terms of sexism or that aspect of it. But in terms of race, because 1968 was such a powerful year,
yes,
pivotal
it was.
Year, and we have Barack Obama now,
mm-hmm.
More than 50% chance of winning the presidency. Have we come far in that regard in terms of race?
Yes, I think we have come far in terms of race. We've come far in terms of gender as well, so don't get me wrong on that. The difference is that to make a racist comment is totally out of line today. To make a sexist comment, you see that all the time. You don't see, you saw, you know, Hillary Clinton nutcrackers. You didn't see, and I hope this doesn't offend anybody, but you didn't see any Barack Obama cotton pickers, did you?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. The American campaign is obviously more interesting than the Canadian one. What issues are you seeing in the Canadian one that interest you?
A lot of them are not being talked about. Afghanistan, number one. You know, another soldier got hit up today and is badly wounded. I know personally a young man who lost both his legs in Afghanistan. It is shattering to see what has happened to him and to his family. I had a girlfriend whose husband came back from Afghanistan and thinks we shouldn't be there. Today we had a letter to the editor in the Toronto Star saying, you know, from a corporal saying we should get out. So number one is Afghanistan. We're not accomplishing anything, and we're just doing the scut work for the Americans as far as I'm concerned. So that's number one. Number two, I'm somewhat at odds with other women who advocate for reproductive freedom on this, but I think we do need an abortion law. We don't have one now, and I think we need something cast in stone that would protect our rights. So this has kind of got slipped under the radar. But overall, I think that we're covering a lot of issues that need to be talked about, everything from child care to the environment, things that we don't hear about in the United States.
You know, we could talk forever, and I do appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today. We ought to do this again.
Okay.
Antony, thanks again for joining us. The Toronto Star is where you can read her column. TheStar.com is where you can read the column online and read her blog. For the commentary, I'm Joseph Plum.